guests are enjoying Jessie's cooked breakfast. I note that mine is the only plate with French toast.
I hear you've had a break-in, sir,
Jenkins says. Sadly, yes. It's a massive pain in the arse.
I'm sorry to hear that, my lord.
Michael about?
Dentist this morning. He says he'll be in around 11. I bite into my breakfast. The melt-in-the-mouth goodness of Jessie's French toast takes me back to my childhood. Kit and I talking cricket scores or bickering about who was kicking who under the table. Marianne's nose in a book, and Jessie's French toast served up with stewed fruits. Today it's apple with cinnamon.
It's nice to have you here, my lord, Danny says. I hope you don't have to rush back to London.
Police just arrived. I'll find out a bit later.
I've let Mrs. Blake know about the burglary. She and Alice can pop round from the house to your flat and clear up.
Thanks. I'll ask Oliver to liaise with her.
Are you enjoying the hideout?
I give her a swift grin.
Very much. Thank you. It's very comfortable.
I hear you had a successful day yesterday.
It was fun. Thank you again, Jenkins. He gives me a nod, and Danny smiles.
That reminds me, she says. There were two very unsavory characters who came calling for you yesterday.
What? She has my immediate attention, and everyone else's in the room. She pales.
They were asking after you. I told them to bugger off, sir.
Unsavory?
Rough-looking, sir. Aggressive. From Eastern Europe, I think. Anyway.
Fuck! Alessia.
Alessia pulls the brush through her hair. It's finally dry enough. She switches off the hairdryer, feeling ill at ease and wondering if she heard something. But it's only the sound of the crashing waves in the cove below. She stands, staring out the window down at the sea. Mr. Maxim gave her the sea. She smiles, remembering her antics on the beach. The rain is easing off. Perhaps they could go for another walk on the shore today, and back to that pub for lunch. That was a good day. Every day here with him has been a good day. From downstairs, she hears the scrape of furniture on the wooden floor and hushed male voices. What? Has Maxim brought someone back to the house?
Urt!
Someone grates in a strangled whisper. It's her mother tongue. Fear and adrenaline sweep through her body as she stands frozen in the bedroom. It's Dante and Illy. They found her.
Chapter 21. I tear down the lane, clattering over the cattle grid and pushing the jag to go faster. I have to get back to the house. I'm finding it hard to breathe. My anxiety is a weight pressing on my chest.
Alessia.
Why did I leave her at the house? If something has happened to her, I will never forgive myself. My brain works feverishly. Is it them? The bastards who trafficked her? I feel sick to my stomach. How the hell did they find us? How? Maybe they were the fuckers who burgled my flat. They found information on the Trevithick Estate and Tressilian Hall. And now they're here, asking questions. Fucking nerve of them, coming to my house! I grip the steering wheel. Hurry, hurry, hurry! If they locate her at the hideout, I'll never see her again. My panic mushrooms. She'll be dragged into a horrific underworld, and I'll never be able to find her. No. Fuck, no! I swerve down the lane toward the hideout, spraying gravel into the hedgerows.
Alessia's heart is pounding, her pulse thumping in her ears even as the blood drains from her head. The room spins once, twice, and her legs start to shake. She's in her worst nightmare. The bedroom door is open and she hears their whispers downstairs. How did they get in? A creak on the stair galvanizes her into action. She sprints into the bathroom and quietly shuts the door. With shaking, clammy hands, she locks it behind her while she gasps for air. How did they find her? How? She's dizzy with fear. Feeling powerless, she quickly scans the room looking for something to use to defend herself. Anything. His razor? Her toothbrush? She picks up both and slips them into her back pocket. But the drawers are empty. There's nothing there. All she can do is hide. She can only hope that the door will hold until Maxim returns. No, Maxim. He is no match for them. He is one man, and they are two. They will harm him. Tears well in her eyes, and she sinks to the floor as her legs give out under her. She leans against the door as human ballast in case they try to break it down.
I heard something.
It's Illy. He's in the bedroom. When did her own language become so terrifying?
Check that door. You in here, you fucking bitch?
Dante calls out and rattles the bathroom door, testing the handle. Alessia puts her fist in her mouth to stop from screaming, and tears trickle down her cheeks. Her body starts shaking. Her terror is overwhelming, and she pants, taking in shallow breaths. She's never felt so frightened. Not even in the truck that brought her to England. She's completely impotent. She doesn't know how to fight, and there's no escape from this room. And she has no way to warn Maxim.
Come out!
Dante's voice makes her jump. It's inches from her ear on the other side of the door.
It will only be worse for you if we have to break the door down.
Alessia screws her eyes up tight and stifles her sobs. Suddenly there's a horrific thud, like a sack of grain falling to the floor, followed by loud cursing, and Alessia is jolted backward.
Sot, sot, sot!
He's trying to break down the door, but it holds. Alessia stands and puts her foot against the door, silently cursing that she's not wearing shoes and socks. Her feet grip the limestone floor, and she presses her full weight against the door in the hope that it might help hold him back.
When I get in there, I'm going to kill you, you fucking bitch. Do you know how much you cost me? Do you?
He slams into the door again, and Alessia knows it's only a matter of time. She sucks in a sob as her despair takes hold. She never found the courage to tell Maxim she loves him.
The Jag hurtles down the lane toward the hideout, and I spot an old BMW encrusted with at least a year's worth of dirt, and it's abandoned haphazardly outside the garage. Fuck. They're here. No, no, no! My fear and rage race into overdrive, threatening to overcome me. Alessia! Calm down, mate. Calm the fuck down. Think, think, think. I pull up and park the car hard against the gate. They won't get out that way. If I go down the entry steps, they'll see me, and I'll lose the element of surprise. I fling open the car door and run to the little used and hidden side gate and down to the scullery room door. My breath is coming in short, sharp bursts as adrenaline pumps into my bloodstream, doubling my heart rate. Calm down, mate. Calm down. The scullery door's ajar. Fuck! Maybe this is how they got into the house. I gulp down a steadying breath, my heart hammering, and gently push open the door and creep in. The adrenaline has sharpened my senses. My breathing is deafening. Quiet! Be fucking quiet! There's shouting. Upstairs. No! 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 If they touch one hair of her head, I will murder them. I turn to the gun cabinet high on the wall and unlock it. I'd stashed my shotguns there yesterday, before Alessia and I went for a walk on the beach. Trying to remain calm, I concentrate on removing one of the Purdys as quietly as I can. With smooth and deliberate movements, I lift it out, open up the barrel, and load two cartridges. I put four more into my coat pocket. I have never been so grateful as I am right now that my father taught me how to shoot. Keep calm. You will only have a chance to save her if you keep calm. I repeat this mantra in my head. Releasing the safety, I brace the gun against my shoulder and sneak into the main room. There's no sign of anyone downstairs, but I hear an almighty crash from upstairs, followed by shouting in a foreign tongue. Alessia screams.
Alessia shrieks as the door gives way, and she's flung across the bathroom floor. Dante almost falls into the room. She curls up into a ball, sobbing as fear paralyzes her body. Her bladder fails, and the telltale wetness seeps down her legs and into her new jeans. Her fate is sealed. She's breathing in short, shallow gasps as her throat constricts. She's dizzy, dizzy with fear.
"There you are, you fucking bitch."
He grabs her hair, pulling her head up. Alessia cries out, and he slaps her hard across her face.
"Do you know how much you've cost me, you fucking whore? You're going to pay every fucking penny back to me with your body."
His face is inches from hers, his eyes dark and feral and full of rage. Alessia gags. His breath is rank, as if something died on his tongue, and his body odor washes over her in a haze of squalor. He slaps her hard again and drags her to her feet by her hair. The pain is indescribable, as though her scalp is being torn from her head.
"Dante, no, no,"
she wails.
"Stop fucking sniveling, you filthy whore, and move."
He shakes her hard and throws her into the bedroom where Ilya is waiting. She lands on the floor, sprawling out like a starfish. She curls up quickly. "This can't be happening." She screws her eyes shut, waiting for the inevitable blows.
"Just kill me. Just kill me."
She wants to die.
"And you've pissed yourself, you dirty pishka. I'm going to fuck you up."
Dante swaggers around her and kicks her hard in her belly. She screams as pain shoots through her body, leaving her gasping for air.
"Step away from her, you fucking piece of shit."
Maxim's voice bellows through the room.
"What?"
Alessia opens bleary eyes.
"He's here."
Maxim is standing on the threshold, shrouded in his dark coat like an avenging archangel, his eyes flashing a deadly green, and he's brandishing his double-barreled shotgun.
"He's here with his gun."
The evil fucker whirls around to face me. He blanches in shock and jumps back, gaping at me, sweat beading on his pale, bald pate. His thin-faced friend also steps back and holds up his hands, his lips twitching. He looks like a fucking rodent, drowning in his oversized parka. The urge to pull the trigger is overwhelming. I have to fight every instinct to stop myself. Baldy is watching me, his eyes focused, weighing me up. Will I shoot? Do I have the balls? "Don't fucking tempt me," I roar. "Keep your hands up, or I'll fucking end you. Step away from the girl, now!" He takes another cautious step back, his eyes flying from me to Alessia as he considers his options. He has none. Fucker. "Alessia, get up! Now, move!" I bark as she's still within his reach. She scrambles to her feet. Her face is red on one side where the cunt must have hit her. I fight the compulsion to blast his head off. "Get behind me," I say through gritted teeth. She slips around me, and I hear her panting with fear. "Both of you, on the floor, on your knees," I shout. "Now!" And not a fucking word from either of you. They exchange a quick look, and I brace my finger on the trigger. Two barrels, both primed. I can take you both down. I will blow your fucking balls off. And I aim for Baldy's crotch. His eyebrows shoot up his ashen forehead, and both men sink to their knees. "Hands behind your heads." They do as they're told, but I have nothing to restrain them with. Bollocks. "Alessia, are you okay?"
"Yes."
My phone starts buzzing in my pocket. Shit. I bet it's Oliver. "Can you take the phone out of the back pocket of my jeans?" I ask Alessia while keeping my aim on the two gangsters. Deftly, she does. "Answer it." I can't see what she's doing, but after a moment, I hear her.
"Hello?"
she says, and there's a pause before she speaks again, in a hushed voice, choked with fear.
"I am Mr. Maxim's cleaner."
Jesus, she's so much more than that. Baldy spits words at his rat-faced colleague.
"Esta prastoja di, nasima prastoja tuta thoash concubine. Ayonyuk vienas dju, gruia ash charkul pema biait."
Ratface replies. "Shut the fuck up," I roar at the two of them. Who is it? I ask Alessia. He says his name is Oliver. Tell him we've captured two intruders at the hideout and to call the police, now. Tell him to call Danny and ask her to send Jenkins here right away. Haltingly, she does. Tell him I will explain later. She repeats what I've said. Mr. Oliver says he is doing it. Goodbye. She hangs up. Lie down, both of you, on your front, hands behind your back. Baldy gives Ratface a quick look. Is he going to try something? I step forward and lower the barrel, aiming for his head. Hello? A voice from downstairs calls up. It's Danny. Already? That makes no sense. Upstairs, Danny! I shout, not taking my eyes off the two lowlifes. I motion with the gun. Fucking lie down. They comply, and I approach the two prone figures on the bedroom floor. Don't move a muscle. I press the muzzle of the gun into Baldy's back. Try me. The shot will break your spine and enter your stomach, and you'll die a slow, agonizing death, which is more than you deserve, you fucking animal.
No, no, please.
He whimpers like a beaten dog in his thick accent. Shut up and keep still. Do you understand? Nod if you do. Both men give me quick, furious nods, and I chance a glance at Alessia, who is wide-eyed, pale, and hugging herself in the doorway. Behind her, Danny appears, and Jenkins behind Danny.
Oh my God!
Danny's hand goes to her mouth. What's happening here? Did Oliver reach you?
No, my lord. We followed you after you leapt up from the breakfast table. We knew something was wrong.
Jenkins hovers in the background.
These two kidnappers broke into the house. They were after Alessia.
I press the barrel into Baldy's back.
Do you have anything I can restrain them with?
I ask Jenkins, keeping my eyes trained on the men on the floor.
I've some baling twine in the back of the Land Rover.
He turns and hurries back down the stairs.
Danny, take Alessia back to the hall, please.
No,
Alessia protests.
Go. You cannot be here when the police arrive. I'll be with you as soon as I can. You'll be safe with Danny.
Come on, child,
Danny says.
I need a change of clothes,
Alessia mumbles. I frown. Why? Alessia dashes into the walk-in wardrobe and comes out a few moments later, carrying one of the bags from our shopping the other day. With one unreadable glance at me, she follows Danny down the stairs.
Alessia stares, unseeing, out the windshield, her hands wrapped around her body as the old woman named Danny drives the large rattling car down a country lane. Where are we going? Her head aches, her scalp and face are throbbing. It also hurts her side when she takes a breath. She tries to keep her breathing shallow. Danny has wrapped her in a blanket that she took from the sofa in the holiday house.
We don't want you catching cold, dear,
she'd said. She has a kind, gentle voice with an accent that Alessia cannot place. She must be a good friend to Mr. Maxim to take such care of her.
Maxim.
She would never forget how he looked when he saved her, in his long coat, brandishing a shotgun like a hero from an old American movie. And she had thought he would be at their mercy. Her stomach roils. She's going to be sick.
Please stop the car.
Danny pulls to a stop, and Alessia almost falls out of the vehicle. She doubles over, retching on the side of the road, losing her breakfast. Danny comes to her aid, holding her hair back as Alessia heaves and heaves until her stomach's empty. Finally, she straightens up, trembling.
Oh, child.
Danny offers her a handkerchief.
Let's get you back to the hall.
As they continue on their journey, Alessia hears sirens in the distance and imagines that the police are arriving at the hideout. She trembles, knotting the handkerchief in her fingers.
It's okay, child, the old woman says. You're safe now.
Alessia shakes her head, trying to process all that has just happened.
He saved her. Again. How could she ever thank him?
Jenkins makes short work of tying the two thugs' hands behind their backs. He lashes their ankles together for good measure.
My lord, he says,
and points to where Ratface's parka has ridden up to reveal a pistol butt in the waistband of his trousers. Armed breaking and entering. This gets better and better. I'm grateful he didn't try to use the weapon on me, or Alessia. I pass Jenkins the shotgun, and after a moment's hesitation, because he deserves it, I give Baldy a fast, forceful kick in his ribs. That's for Alessia, you fucking scumbag. He grunts in pain as Jenkins looks on, and I kick him again, harder this time. And all the other women you've sold into slavery. Jenkins gasps. Traffickers? Yes, him too, after Alessia. I nod toward Ratface, who's glaring at me with hatred. Jenkins gives him a swift kick. I kneel beside Baldy and grab his ear, wrenching his head back. You are a blight on humanity. You're going to rot in jail, and I'll make sure they throw away the fucking key. He puckers his lips and tries to spit in my face, but he misses, his spit drizzling down his chin. I slam his head onto the floor with a loud thud. Hopefully, he'll have a cracking headache. I stand up, fighting the renewed urge to kick him to a pulp.
We could finish them off and dispose of the bodies, my lord, Jenkins offers, placing the barrel of the gun against Ratface's head. No one would ever find them on the estate.
For a moment, I'm not sure if Jenkins is joking or not, but Ratface believes him, screwing his eyes up, his expression riddled with dread.
Good. Now you know how Alessia felt, you piece of shit.
Tempting though that idea is, it would make an awful mess in here, and I don't think the cleaning crew would thank us. We all look up when we hear the sirens. And there's the small matter of the law, I add.
Danny turns into a smaller lane by a charming old-fashioned house, and the antiquated car shakes as they go over some metal rods in the road. The land here is green and lush, even though it's winter. They drive through an open and rolling pasture. It looks groomed, not wild like the countryside she's seen since she got here. It's dotted with well-fed sheep. As the car rattles down the road, a large gray house looms before them. It's imposing, the biggest house Alessia has ever seen. She recognizes the chimney. It's the one she saw from the road when she was walking with Maxim. He said it belonged to someone, but she can't remember who. Perhaps this is where Danny lives. Why is she cooking for Mr. Maxim when she lives here? Danny drives around to the rear of the house and pulls up by the back door.
We're here, she says. Welcome to Tressilian Hall.
Alessia tries but fails to give her a smile and climbs out of the car. Still feeling unsteady on her feet, she follows Danny through the door and into what looks like the kitchen. It's a large, airy room, the most spacious kitchen Alessia has ever seen. Wooden cupboards, tiled floor. It's spotlessly tidy. Old and modern at the same time. There are two stoves. Two! And a massive table that seats at least 14 people. Two tall dogs with auburn coats come bounding toward them. Alessia recoils.
Dine, Jensen! Dine, Haley!
Danny's command stops the dogs in their tracks. They lie down, gazing up at both women with big, expressive eyes. Alessia regards them suspiciously. They are handsome hounds, but where she comes from, dogs do not live in the house.
They are harmless, my dear. Just pleased to meet you. Come with me, she says. Would you like a bath?
Her tone is solicitous and kind, but Alessia blushes, mortified.
Yes, she whispers. She knows.
She knows that she's wet herself.
You must have had a terrible fright.
Alessia nods and blinks back the tears that well in her eyes.
Ah, lassie, don't you be crying. His lordship wouldn't want that. We'll get you sorted. Lordship.
She follows Danny along a wood-paneled corridor hung on both sides with old paintings of landscapes, horses, buildings, religious scenes, and a couple of portraits. They pass many closed doors, and ascend a narrow wooden staircase to yet another long paneled corridor. Eventually, Danny stops and opens a door into a pleasant room with a white bed, white furniture, and pale blue walls. She walks through the room to an ensuite bathroom and turns on the faucets. Alessia stands behind her, pulling the blanket around herself and watching as water thunders into the bath and steam rises. Danny adds some aromatic bubble bath that Alessia recognizes as Joe Malone, like in the hideout.
I'll bring some towels for you. If you put your clothes by the bed, I'll have them laundered in no time.
She gives Alessia a sympathetic smile and slips out, leaving her alone. Alessia stares at the water cascading into the bath, a foam forming and spreading over the surface. The bath is old, a tub with claw feet. Her body starts to shiver, and she clutches the blanket and pulls it tighter around her. She's still standing there when Danny returns with fresh towels. Draping them over a white wicker chair, she shuts off the water, then turns her attention to Alessia, her sharp blue eyes shining with compassion.
Do you still want a bath, dear?
Alessia nods.
Would you like me to leave?
Alessia shakes her head. She doesn't want to be alone. Danny lets out a sigh of sympathy.
Okay, then. Would you like me to help you undress? Is that what you want?
Alessia nods.
And we'll need to interview your fiancé, PC Nichols says. She's around the same age as me, tall and willowy, bright-eyed and keen, scribbling down every word I utter. I drum my fingers on the dining room table. How much longer are we going to be? I'm anxious to get to Alessia, my fiancé. Both Nichols and her boss, Sergeant Nan Caro, have patiently sat through the sorry tale of Alessia's attempted kidnapping. Naturally, I've been economical with the truth, but I've kept as close to it as I can. Of course, I respond, once she's recovered. Those bastards really roughed her up. If I hadn't arrived back here when I had... Briefly, I close my eyes as a tremor runs down my spine. I might never have seen her again. You've both been through a terrible experience. Nan Caro shakes his head in disgust. Will you have her checked over by a doctor? Yes. I hope Danny's had the foresight to organize one. I hope she makes a quick recovery, he says. I'm glad Nan Caro's here. I've known him since I was a child. We've had the odd run-in over noisy late-night parties and drinking on the beach, but he has always been fair. And of course it was he who came to the house to inform us of Kit's tragic accident.
If these men have form, they'll be on our database. Petty crime, more serious offences, they'll all show up, Lord Trevethick, Nan Caro continues. Got everything you need, Nichols? He asks his eager colleague.
Yes, sir. Thank you, my lord, she says to me. She looks thrilled, and I suspect she's never had to deal with an attempted kidnapping before.
Good. Nan Caro gives her an approving smile. Lovely place you have here, my lord.
Thank you.
And how have you been keeping, since your brother passed away?
Holding up?
Sad business.
Indeed.
He was a good man.
I nod. He was. My phone buzzes and I check my screen. It's Oliver. I ignore the call.
We'll be on our way, sir. I'll let you know how the investigation proceeds.
I bet these assholes were the ones who broke into my flat in Chelsea.
We'll be sure to check on it, sir.
I escort them to the front door.
Oh, and congratulations on your impending nuptials.
Nan Caro offers me his hand. Thank you. I'll pass your well wishes on to my fiancé. I just have to ask her to marry me first.
The water is hot and soothing. Danny has left to wash Alessia's dirty laundry. She's promised to be back in a wee minute. She's going to fetch the rest of Alessia's clothes from the car and bring her some painkillers for her head. It's throbbing because Dante pulled her upright by her hair. Alessia's trembling has subsided, but her anxiety remains. She closes her eyes, and all she can see is Dante's snarling face in front of hers. She opens them again immediately and shudders, remembering the smell. Sot. The stink of him. Fetid, stale sweat, unwashed, and his breath. She gags and splashes her face to rinse away the memory, but the hot water stings where he hit her. Illy's words sound in her head.
Nosa me pastruas e dotathuas concubin.
If by cleaner, you mean concubine. Concubine. The word is apt. She doesn't want to acknowledge it, but it's the truth. She is Maxim's concubine, and his cleaner. Her mood grows bleaker still. What did she expect? The moment she defied her father, her fate was sealed. But she had no choice. If she had stayed in Cucas, she would be married to a volatile and violent man. Alessia shudders. She had begged her father to stop the betrothal, but he ignored her and her mother's pleas. He had given that man his word of honor, his besa. And there was nothing either of them could do. Baba would not go back on his word. He would bring great dishonor to the family name if he did. Her mother's solution was to unwittingly put her in the hands of those gangsters. But now that they are in police custody, they are no longer a threat to her, and she has to accept the reality of her situation. While she's been in Cornwall, laughing on the beach, drinking in the pub, eating in fine restaurants, having sexual intercourse and falling in love with Mr. Maxim, she has lost sight of that reality. Being with him has filled her head with illusions, just as her grandmother had done, giving her crazy ideas about independence and liberation. Alessia had left her homeland to escape her betrothed, but also, in good faith, expecting to find work. That's what she needed to do, to work, to be independent, not a kept woman. She stares into the dissipating bubbles in the bath. She hadn't expected to fall in love. Danny comes bustling back into the bathroom, holding a large navy blue bathrobe.
Come now, let's get you out of there. We don't want you turning into a prune, she says.
Prune? Alessia rises, on automatic, and Danny drapes the bathrobe around her and helps her step out of the bath.
Is that better? She asks.
Alessia nods.
Thank you, missus. My name's Danny. I know we haven't been formally introduced, but that's what everyone calls me here. I've brought a glass of water, some tablets, and an ice pack for your head, and some arnica cream for your cheek. It will help with the bruising, and I've called the doctor to come look at that nasty bruise on your side. Let's get you into bed. You must be exhausted.
She ushers Alessia into the bedroom.
Maxim, his lordship will be along as soon as he's dealt with the police. Come now.
His lordship?
Yes, dear.
Alessia frowns, and Danny's expression echoes hers.
Did you not know? Maxim is the Earl of Trevethick.
Chapter 22.
Earl of Trevethick.
That's his house, Danny says gently, as if talking to a child.
All the land surrounding the house, the village.
She stops.
He didn't tell you.
Alessia shakes her head.
I see.
Danny's white brows knit together, but she shrugs.
Well, I'm sure he had his reasons. Now, shall I leave you to get dressed? Your bag of clothes is on the chair.
Alessia nods, and Danny takes her leave, shutting the door behind her. Stunned, Alessia stares at the closed door, her mind imploding. Her knowledge of the English peerage is limited to two Georgette Hare books her grandmother had smuggled into Albania. As far as Alessia knows, there is no aristocracy in her country. In ancient times, yes, but since the communists had seized all land after the Second World War, the nobles that lived there had fled. But here, Mr. Maxim is an earl. No, not Mister. He's Lord Maxim. Milord. Why didn't he tell her? And the answer echoes loudly and painfully through her head. Because she is his cleaner.
Nasse pastruese dote thote concubine. If by cleaner, you mean concubine.
She sucks in a breath, wrapping the bathrobe tighter around herself against the winter chill and this distressing news. Why did he keep this from her? Because she is not good enough for him, of course. She is only good for one thing. Her stomach lurches at his betrayal. How could she be so gullible? Feeling raw and wounded by his dishonesty, she wipes away the tears that spring to her eyes. She's been in denial. Her relationship with him has been too good to be true. Deep down, she suspected this, and now she knows the truth. But he never made any promises to her. Those were all in her head. He's never told her he loves her. He's never pretended to love her. Yet in the short time she's known him, she's fallen for him. Fallen from a great height. I am a fool. A misguided fool in love. She closes her eyes in anguish as hot tears of shame and regret course down her cheeks. Furious, she dashes them away and begins to dry herself briskly. This is her wake-up call. She takes a long breath. She's cried enough. Her deepening anger gives her momentum. She's not going to cry over him. She's mad at him and at herself for being so stupid. In her heart, she knows that her fury is masking her hurt, and she's grateful for it. It's less painful than his betrayal. She drops the robe on the floor, grabs the bag of clothes off the blue chair, and empties the contents onto the bed. Thankful that she had acted on impulse to bring her old clothes too, she tugs on her pink panties, bra, her own jeans, her Arsenal FC top, and her sneakers. That's the extent of her own stuff. She's not brought her coat, but she grabs one of the sweaters that Mr. Maxim, Lord Maxim, bought her, and the blanket that Danny had grabbed from the hideout. Dante and Illy will be arrested, and surely once the police establish the extent of their crimes, they'll be incarcerated, and those brutes will no longer be a threat to her. She can leave. She's not going to stay here. She doesn't want to be with a man who has deceived her, a man who will cast her aside when he tires of her. She would rather leave than be sent away. She has to get out. Now. Swiftly, she downs the two tablets Danny has left for her. Then, with one last glance around the elegant bedroom, she opens the door a crack. There's no one on the landing. She slips out of the room, closing the door behind her. Somehow, she needs to find her way back to the hideout to retrieve her money and her belongings. She cannot leave the house the way she came in. Danny might be in the kitchen. She turns right and heads down the long corridor.
The Jag skids to a halt by the old stables. I fling open the door and abandon the car, flying into the house. I'm desperate to see Alessia. Danny, Jesse, and the dogs are in the kitchen. Not now, boys, I instruct the dogs as they leap up to greet me and be petted.
Welcome back, my lord. The police gone?
Danny asks.
Yes, where is she?
In the blue room. Thanks. In haste, I make for the door.
Oh, my lord!
Danny calls after me, and there's a waver in her voice that brings me to a halt.
What? How is she?
Shaken, sir. She threw up on the way over here.
Is she okay now?
She's had a bath, and she's changing into fresh clothes, and...
Danny glances with uncertainty at Jesse, who goes back to peeling spuds.
What is it? I demand.
Danny pales.
I mentioned that you're the Earl of Trevethick.
What? Shit!
I race out of the kitchen, along the west hallway, and bound up the back stairs toward the blue room with Jensen and Healy at my heels. My heart is pounding.
Bugger, bugger, bugger! I wanted to tell her. What must she be thinking?
Outside the blue room door, I stop and take a deep breath, ignoring the dogs who have chased after me, convinced some new game is afoot. Alessia's had a horrific scare today. Now she's in a place she doesn't know, with people she doesn't know. She's probably utterly overwhelmed. And she's going to be really fucking angry I didn't tell her. I knock on the door briskly and wait. I knock again. Alessia? There's no answer. Fuck, she's really pissed off with me. With caution, I open the door. Her clothes are scattered on the bed, her robe discarded on the floor, but there's no sign of her. I check the bathroom. It's empty, except for the trace of her scent, lavender and roses. For an instant, I close my eyes and inhale. It's soothing. Where the hell is she? She's probably gone off to explore the house. Or she's left. Shit! I storm out of the room and bellow her name down the corridor. My voice echoes off the walls hung with portraits of my ancestors, but it's met with a resounding silence. Dread seeps into my bones. Where is she? Has she passed out somewhere? She's fled. This is all too much for her. Or maybe she thinks I don't care. Fuck! I pace down the hallway, throwing open each door, with Jensen and Healy as my wingmen.
Alessia is lost. She's trying to find a way out. On tiptoe, she walks past door after door, painting after painting, along yet another wood-paneled corridor, until she eventually reaches a pair of double doors. She pushes through and finds herself at the top of a grand, wide staircase carpeted in scarlet and blue, which leads to a cavernous, dark hallway below. On the landing, there's a mullioned bay window, beside which stand two suits of armor holding what look like pikes. On the wall over the staircase is a massive faded tapestry, bigger than the kitchen table she saw earlier, that depicts a man on bended knee to his sovereign. Well, Alessia assumes he must be the sovereign, judging by the crown he's wearing. On the opposing walls above the staircase, there are two portraits, huge, both men. One is from an ancient time, the other far more recent. She sees the family resemblance in their faces and has a flash of recognition. They each stare at her with the same imperious green eyes. His green eyes. This is Maxim's family. His heritage. She finds it almost impossible to grasp. But then her gaze falls on the carved twin-headed eagles that sit on the newel posts at the top, the turns, and the bottom of the staircase. The symbol of Albania. Suddenly she hears him shout out her name. It startles her. No. He's back. He shouts again. He sounds panicked, desperate. Alessia freezes at the top of the impressive staircase, staring at the history that surrounds her. She's torn. From far off beneath her, a clock with a booming chime signals the hour, making her jump. Once, twice, three times. Alessia! Maxim calls again, nearer this time, and she can hear his footsteps. He's running, running toward her. The clock is still chiming, loud and clear. What should she do? She grips the ornate eagle at the corner of the staircase as Maxim and the two dogs burst through the double doors. He stops when he sees her. His eyes sweep from her face to her feet, and he frowns.
I've found her. But my relief is tempered by her aloof yet inscrutable expression, and the fact that she's wearing her old clothes and carrying a sweater and a blanket. Shit, this does not look good. Her stance reminds me of the first time I encountered her in my hallway all those weeks ago. She's clutching the newel post like she clutched that broom. My senses are on high alert. Tread warily, dude. There you are. Where are you going? I ask. She tosses her hair over her shoulder with that careless grace she has and tilts her chin in my direction. I'm leaving. No! It's like she's kicked me in the stomach. What? Why? You know why. She sounds haughty, her expression etched with righteous indignation. Alessia, I'm sorry. I should have told you.
But you did not.
I can't argue with that. I stare at her while the hurt in her dark eyes burns a hole in my conscience.
I understand.
She lifts one of her shoulders.
I am only your cleaner.
No, no, no. I stalk toward her. That's not the reason.
Sir, is everything okay?
Danny's voice echoes off the stone walls and up the staircase from beneath us. I lean over the balustrade, and she appears with Jesse and Brody, one of the estate hands, in the hallway below. The three of them gape up at us, open-mouthed, like curious carp from the fish pond.
Go, now, all of you, go!
I wave them away. Danny and Jesse exchange anxious glances, but they scatter. Thank fuck. I turn my attention back to Alessia. This is why I didn't bring you here. There are just too many people in this house. She tears her gaze away from me, her brow furrowed, her mouth a tight line. This morning I had breakfast with 9 staff, and that was just the first sitting. I didn't want to intimidate you with all this. I wave at the portraits of my father and the First Earl while she traces the intricate carvings on the eagle with one finger. She remains mute. And I wanted you to myself, I whisper. A tear slides down her cheek.
Fuck. Do you know what he said?
She whispers.
Who? Yili.
One of those fucking intruders at the hideout.
No.
Where is she going with this?
He said that I am your concubine.
Her voice is hushed, full of shame.
No. That's absurd. It's the 21st century.
It takes all my self-restraint not to pull her into my arms, but I inch closer, so close that the warmth from her body seeps into mine. Somehow, I manage not to touch her.
I would say that you're my girlfriend.
That's what we say here, though I don't want to presume. We've not discussed our relationship, as this has all happened so quickly, but that's what I want to call you. Girlfriend. My girlfriend. Which means that we are together in a relationship. But that's only if you'll have me. Her eyelashes flutter over her dark, dark eyes, but she gives nothing away.
Shit.
You're a bright, talented woman, Alessia. And you're free. Free to make your own choices.
But I'm not.
You are here. I know you're from a different culture, and I know we're not economic equals, but that's just an accident of birth. We are equals in every other way. I've fucked up. I should have told you, and I'm sorry, deeply sorry. But I don't want you to go. I want you to stay. Please. Her fathomless eyes strip me bare as she studies my face. And then she turns her attention to the carved eagle.
Why is she avoiding me? What is she thinking?
Is it the trauma she's just been through? Or is it because those fuckers are out of the picture, so she no longer needs me?
Shit. Maybe that's the reason.
Look, I can't keep you here if you want to leave. Magda is moving to Canada, so where you'll go, I don't know. If nothing else, stay until you know where. But please don't go. Stay. With me.
She can't run. She can't. Forgive me. Please.
I hold my breath, waiting. It's excruciating. I'm the defendant in the dock, waiting for the verdict. She turns her tear-stained face to me.
You are not ashamed of me?
Ashamed? No. I can bear it no longer. I skim the back of my index finger across her cheek, capturing a tear.
No. No. Of course not.
I've fallen in love with you. Her lips part, and I hear her just audible gasp.
Shit. Am I too late?
Her eyes glisten with fresh tears, and my heart clenches with a new and intimidating sensation. Perhaps she'll reject me. My anxiety level ratchets up several notches, and I've never felt as vulnerable as I do now.
What's the verdict, Alessia?
I open my arms, and she looks from my hands to my face, her expression uncertain. It's killing me. She bites her lower lip and takes one small, hesitant step, and she's in my embrace. I wrap my arms around her and press her to my chest. I never want to let her go. Closing my eyes, I bury my nose in her hair and inhale her sweet scent. "My love," I whisper. She shudders and starts to sob.
"I know, I know. I've got you. You've had a terrible fright. I'm sorry I left you on your own. It was a stupid thing to do. Forgive me. But those assholes are in police custody. They're gone. They won't harm you again. I've got you." Her arms slide around me, and she grabs my coat at the back. She holds me as she weeps. "I should have told you, Alessia. I'm sorry."
We stand for seconds, minutes, I don't know. Jensen and Healy give up on us and wander down the stairs.
"You can cry on me any time," I tease.
She sniffles, and I tip her chin up and stare down into beautiful red-rimmed eyes.
"I thought, oh God, I thought if they got their hands on you, I'd never see you again."
Swallowing, she gives me a weak smile. "And you must know," I continue, "I'd be honored to call you mine. I need you." And loosening my hold, I gently caress her face, avoiding the slight red mark on her right cheek. The sight of her bruise fills me with anger, but taking great care not to touch it, I smooth away her tears with my thumbs. She places her hand on my chest. Through my shirt, I feel the warmth. It spreads everywhere. Alessia clears her throat.
"I was so scared. I thought I'd never see you again. But my biggest, sorrow, regret," she whispers, was that I never told you that I love you."
Chapter 23. Joy bursts like a million fireworks within me from head to foot. Its intensity leaves me breathless.
"I can't quite believe it."
"You do?"
"Yes,"
Alessia whispers with a timid smile.
"Since when?"
She pauses and lifts a shoulder in a coy shrug.
"Since you gave me the umbrella."
I beam at her.
"I felt so good about that.
Your wet footprints were all over my hall.
So, are you saying you'll stay?"
"Yes."
"Here?"
"Yes."
"I'm so very glad to hear that, my love."
I brush her bottom lip with my thumb and lean down to kiss her. I place my lips on hers, gently, but she ignites around me, her fervor taking me by surprise. Her lips and tongue are greedy, urgent. Her hands are in my hair, tugging and twisting. She wants more, so much more. I groan as my body comes alive, and I deepen the kiss, taking everything she has to offer. There's a desperate quality to her demanding mouth. She's needy, and I want to be the one to fulfill her need. My hands move into her hair, holding her still, steadying her, slowing our pace. I want to take her here, now, on the landing. Alessia. My arousal is instant. I want her. I need her. I love her. But she's been through hell. She winces when I run my hand down her side, and her reaction brings me to my senses.
"No,"
I whisper, and she pulls back, giving me a carnal but bewildered and disappointed look.
"You're hurt," I explain.
"I'm okay."
She's breathless, and she cranes her neck to kiss me again.
"Let's just take a moment,"
I whisper, and I rest my forehead on hers. You've had a horrible morning. She's extremely emotional, and her ardor may be a direct reaction to being roughed up by those assholes. The thought is sobering. Or maybe it's because she loves me. I like that idea better. We stand forehead to forehead as we each catch our breath. She strokes my cheek, then tilts her head to one side, and a hint of a smile plays on her lips.
You are the Earl of Trevethick, she teases. When were you going to tell me?
There's a mischievous twinkle in her eye, and I laugh out loud, knowing that she's echoing my question from the other night.
I'm telling you now.
She grins and taps her lip with her finger. I turn and wave theatrically to the portrait that dates from 1667. May I introduce Edward, the first Earl of Trevethick. And that gentleman, I point to the other painting with my thumb, that's my father, the 11th Earl. He was a farmer and a photographer too, and he was an ardent Chelsea supporter, so I'm not sure what he would have made of your Arsenal top. Alessia gives me a puzzled look. They are rival London football teams.
Oh no,
she laughs.
Where is your portrait?
I don't have one. I haven't been the Earl for very long. My older brother, Kit, he was the real Earl, but he never got around to having his portrait painted.
Your brother who died?
Yes. The title and everything that comes with it were his responsibility until a few weeks ago. I wasn't meant for the role, for all this. I tilt my head toward the suits of armor. Running this place, this museum, it's all new to me.
Is that why you didn't tell me?
Alessia asks. It's one of the reasons. I think part of me is in denial. All this and the other estates, it's a lot of responsibility, and I've not been trained for it. Whereas Kit was. This conversation is getting too deep and too close to home. I continue with a slight smile. I'm very lucky. I've never really had to work before, and now all this is mine. And I have to maintain it for the next generation. It's my duty. I give her an apologetic shrug. This is who I am, and now you know. And I'm glad you've decided to stay.
My lord!
Danny calls up from below.
Maxim's shoulders sag a little. Alessia senses that he wants to be left alone.
Yes, Danny, he answers.
The doctor is here to see Alessia.
Maxim turns an anxious gaze to her.
Doctor?
I'm okay,
Alessia says, hesitantly. He frowns.
Send her up to the blue room.
It's not Dr. Carter, it's Dr. Conway, sir. I'll send him up right away, my lord.
Thank you,
Maxim calls down to Danny, and he takes Alessia's hand.
What did that bastard do to you?
Alessia can't look him in the eye. She feels ashamed. Ashamed that she's brought this horror into Maxim's life.
He kicked me, she whispers.
Danny wanted the doctor to see this.
She lifts the side of her Arsenal shirt to reveal a vivid red mark that's the size of a woman's fist.
Fuck!
Maxim's expression hardens, his mouth pressing into a thin line.
I should have killed that scum, he hisses.
He takes her hand, and they walk back to the blue room where an elderly man with a large leather bag is waiting. Alessia is surprised to see that the clothes she'd left on the bed and the floor have been tidied away.
Dr. Conway, it's been a while.
Maxim shakes hands with him. The doctor has wild white hair, a wispy mustache, and a beard to match. His keen blue eyes are the same color as his crooked bow tie.
Have we brought you out of retirement?
My lord, you have, but only for today.
Dr. Carter is on holiday.
It's good to see you looking so well.
He places a hand on Maxim's shoulder, and a look passes between them. And you, Doctor? Maxim answers, his voice gruff, and Alessia suspects the doctor is checking on Maxim's well-being following the death of his brother. How's your mother? The same. Maxim's lips quirk up. Dr. Conway's laugh is deep and gravelly. He turns his attention to Alessia, who tightens her hold on Maxim's hand. Good day.